The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Brandy Spergata for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from Oprah Magazine. It'll wanderlust into an experience you'll never forget, but also save you money. First, you'll need to figure out where to go. Will you stay within the 50 states or head somewhere internationally? Hint, scrolling Instagram travel accounts is a fun way to research. Once you've picked a destination and stocked up on travel dresses, there's still plenty to organize before the fun begins. That road trip itinerary isn't going to map itself. And what times are your connecting flights again? Then there's managing the hotel or Airbnb reservation and figuring out how to stay on budget when you're taking your kids out to eat every night. That's where free travel apps like TripIt, Kayak, and Hopper come in handy. With the help of the best travel apps, you'll actually enjoy the build-up to your next adventure, or at the very least, you'll be able to find cheap flights to get you there. Number 1, Hopper, best for finding cheap flights. One of the best travel apps for flights, Hopper analyzes billions of airfare and hotel prices a day, as well as its vast archive of historical data, to tell you whether to wait or book your trip. Here's how it works. Type in your destination, and a color-coded calendar will show you the cheapest and most expensive dates to fly. Hopper will then recommend whether you should go ahead and buy now or hold off until the rates get better. If it tells you to stay tuned, you can set up a price watch and put your phone away. When the fares drop to its lowest point and it's time for you to swipe, Hopper will send you a notification. Number 2, TripIt, best travel planner app. TripIt organizes all of your itineraries in one place. Available for both iPhone and Android, users simply forward confirmation emails to plans@tripit.com, and the app will create you a free master doc for each trip. You can access the itinerary anywhere, even without an internet connection. Their premium service, TripIt Pro, which is $49 a year, boosts your organizing power with additional features. These include real-time flight alerts, refund notifications, and the ability to track reward points and miles, as well as a currency converter, a list of socket and plug requirements, and tipping advice for 180 countries. Number 3, Road Trippers, best for road trips. You have a considerable amount of flexibility on a road trip, but planning them requires effort. Try Road Trippers the next time you're inspired to grab a car and go. The app allows you to map your route with up to 7 waypoints free of charge. After that, there's an option to upgrade to Road Trippers Plus. Along your route, the app will recommend local food options, roadside attractions, scenic stops, and more. They even have pre-made guides for popular road trips. Number 4, Skyscanner, best for finding unexpected destinations. Skyscanner's Everywhere feature allows you to look for surprising destinations simply by sorting by your budget and your travel time frame. For example, you may think Europe will be out of your price range, but this feature could make the trip possible. Like Hopper and Kayak, it also helps you find the best airfare rates by alerting you when prices dip. Drive Weather, best travel weather app for road trips. The last thing you want is to get caught in a nasty, vision-obscuring storm when you're on a long stretch of highway with your family or friends. Drive Weather was designed to help road travelers avoid the worst weather conditions. The app lets you track your best, read sunniest, departure time, providing radar views and routes from one point to another, with rain, freezing rain, ice, and snow icons that let you know when there's slippery roads ahead. The free version offers 2 days of forecasts, city-to-city routing, and a 900-mile trip limit. The ad-free $9.99 a year version offers 7 days of forecast, wind direction info, specific address-to-address routing, and no cap on trip length. Number 6, Hotel Tonight, best last-minute hotel deals. Book that spontaneous flight, and now you're trying to figure out where you're going to sleep at night? In the middle of a road adventure and need to find lodging ASAP? Don't panic, there's an app for that. Hotel Tonight finds last-minute deals on hotels near your location, ranging from basic to luxe options, including unique boutique hotels. The app allows you to filter for location, dates, the number of guests, pet-friendly options, and amenities like a gym. Number 7, Waze, best for navigating traffic. Waze makes it easy for you to avoid congestion, blocked roads, police, accidents, or other hazards that might increase your driving time, because starting off vacation by sitting in traffic is a major mood killer. The app has a speedometer to help you make sure you're staying within the speed limit, and it updates your arrival time based on live traffic data. Number 8, Kayak, best for filtering airlines and hotels. The beauty of Kayak is that it aggregates the best fares from most airlines, allowing you to filter flight options based on your airline preference and departure times, while easily changing dates and destinations. You can also find deals on car rentals and hotels. Once you've booked, the app, available on iOS and Google Play, keeps your plans organized and updates you on flight status, airport terminals, and security wait times. Number 9, Airbnb, best for non-hotel lodgers. Whether you're looking to rent a room, a house, or an entire hacienda, you can search for accommodations in your desired location. The app, free on Google Play and iTunes, lets you filter through photos and reviews, as well as sort by amenities, like a pool or washing machine. Plus, a local host can provide insight about great dining spots. Number 10, Time Shifter, best for preventing jet lag. If you have an international trip in the works and you're hoping to fend off jet lag, give Time Shifter a try. The app was developed by scientists who use sleep and circadian neuroscience to help inform the personalized jet lag plans they craft for you. According to the app's website, even astronauts and elite athletes have used it to arrive at their destinations in tip-top shape. The first jet lag plan is free, so try it out on your next adventure across the world. Number 11, Meetup, best for connecting with locals. One way to fully immerse yourself in your travel destination is to meet and talk with locals. Meetup can help you connect with people who are interested in the same thing as you, even while on vacation. Whether it's cooking, tech, sports, music, or photography, the app will help you make new friends all over the world. Number 12, Hound from SoundHound, best voice-controlled app. Free on iOS devices and Android, Hound from SoundHound is a voice assistant app that you can chat with like you would a travel agent. For instance, say, "Okay, Hound, show me hotels in Chicago for this weekend that cost less than $300 and are pet-friendly." Number 13, Roam to Rio, best app for international travel. With data from over 160 countries, Roam to Rio is one of the best international travel apps. Simply enter any address, landmark, or city as your destination, and the app displays info about accommodations and things to do. Free on iOS and Android, Roam to Rio also shows you how to get around and compare costs if, for example, you're debating flying from Florence to Rome versus taking the train. Number 14, App in the Air, best for frequent flyer travel. This one's been placed on Apple's coveted best app list because it not only keeps track of itineraries, boarding passes, and frequent flyer programs, but it also tracks boarding and landing times, along with current waits for check-in, security, and customs. Through augmented reality, it even helps you figure out if your carry-on is the right fit for your next flight. For the best place to grab airport coffee or where you can get a mimosa before 7 a.m. in a specific terminal, the app also pulls tips from fellow travelers. And if you're the competitive type, you can keep score of all the places you've been on the worldwide leaderboard. The app is free on iOS and Google Play, but also offers a paid upgraded version. Number 15, TripAdvisor, best for finding recommendations. For the unacquainted, TripAdvisor has over 700 million reviews of 8 million destinations to peruse before booking your hotel, dinner reservation, or even planning a day at the museum. Free on both iOS and Google Play, the comprehensive app is available in 28 languages. You can also follow friends and travel experts for advice that matches your interests, view travel videos, read articles for inspiration, and write your own reviews if you're so inclined. Number 16, Trabi Pocket, best for budgeting. Perfect for the business traveler who needs to track spending and receipts, or anyone who likes to stay on top of budgets, this app also boasts a helpful exchange rate calculator. It's free on iOS and Android with options to upgrade. Number 17, PackPoint, best for remembering items. Never forget your blank again is the slogan for PackPoint, which helps you build a packing list based on your trip. Input the dates, location, the type of travel, and the activities you plan on doing, and the app will conveniently generate a list of items you should bring. It even checks the weather to make sure you bring an umbrella or a heavier jacket, depending on your destination. Number 18, Gas Buddy, best for refueling on road trips. Despite the cost-saving benefits of a road trip, gas money can really start to add up if you're driving for days. Enter Gas Buddy, which helps you find the best gas prices near you. With a 4.7 out of 5 rating and over 300,000 reviews on Apple, the app has helpful features like a gas price map, outage tracker during natural disasters, a trip cost calculator, and useful search filters like brand, price, location, available restrooms, and more. Bonus, you can save 5 cents a gallon on every gallon if you use the app's free Pay with Gas Buddy card. Number 19, All Trails, best for nature lovers. If you're like Oprah and think hiking is so fun, you need to download this app. All Trails is for nature lovers, hiking enthusiasts, and even those who just want to fit in a cardio workout while on vacation. The app has over 100,000 curated trails, which all but guarantee you'll find one near you, and lets you create and share custom maps with friends. Number 20, Flush, best for bathroom breaks. When you gotta go, you gotta go, but finding a public toilet when you're traveling can be quite the task. The Flush Toilet Finder saves you time and helps you avoid an accident with the over 190,000 public bathrooms in its database. Flush will tell you which ones are free, accessible for the disabled, or require a key, and users can even rate and report a toilet. The Flush app is available for free on iOS and Google Play. Number 21, City Mapper, best for urban explorers. City Mapper helps you find the fastest, easiest way to get around major cities in the US, Canada, Asia, Australia, Europe, and Latin America. Offering up-to-the-minute info on mass transit, commuter trains, ferries, bike share, and car services, you'll know the second there's a service disruption or traffic jam and how long it'll take you to walk instead. With its directions and maps, the free app will have you zipping around like a true native in no time. Number 22, Soar, best app for fear of flying. Has an extreme fear of flying kept you from taking a plane ticket to your dream destination? Since 1982, therapist and former airline pilot Captain Tom Bunn has offered his SOAR course to nervous flyers. The anxiety-soothing resource is now available on the go in this app, including fact-based plane info to start calming your brain down. The best feature for me is the turbulence tracker, raves O, the Oprah Magazine's senior editor Molly Sims. You hold it in your lap or put on the tray, and it shows you the G-force of the bumps you're experiencing in real time. It proves that they're actually not all that powerful and not even close to what it would take to, like, break a wing off. Number 23, Day Use, best for those with long layovers. Look, there's plenty of reasons why someone would want a hotel for just a few hours. The only thing Day Use needs to know is what you're seeking from one of the 5,000 accommodations across 25 countries they can instantly connect you to, and when you need it. Start times range from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. You'll find rooms marked down by as much as 75% for your 1 to 10 hour stay. Bonus, you can use the hotel's amenities during your abbreviated stay, so take advantage of that pool, gym, or sauna before you head back out. Number 24, RV Parks and Campgrounds, best app for happy campers. In this app, folks who are all about that RV life will find 40,000 stop-offs anyone on the open road will want to know about, public and private RV parks and campgrounds, as well as rest areas, gas stations, and stores. The parks are sorted by rating with their amenities listed, and your options include photos so you know what to expect ahead of time. Unlike other RV park apps with similar search capacity, RV Parks and Campgrounds is both ad-free and actually free. Number 25, Yelp, best app for finding nightlife on vacation. No, Yelp isn't a travel app per se, but while you may think of it as something you use at home to pick a restaurant for date night, you're going to be the hero of the destination bachelorette party when you find the perfect salsa club spur of the moment. Search with Yelp's insanely detailed filters to find food, auto repair, and just about every service imaginable. They're all vetted with reviews from fellow users, and the photos of food can save you from a disappointing portion at a triple dollar sign eatery. Our next article is titled Stories of the Most Moving Gifts Ever Received. No matter the cost, a truly great gift is priceless. It lets us know we are seen, understood, loved. To celebrate this season of giving, we gathered stories of the most moving gifts ever received, from extraordinary kindnesses to everyday items, made of shiny gold or humble plastic, each came wrapped up with a memory that brings endless joy. Nature and nurture. I just ended a serious relationship and moved twice, and I was putting in 16-hour days as a mental health and addiction worker. A friend who knew I was really stressed out came to pick me up for dinner, and he brought bird seeds so we could stop at a park to feed the ducks. It was exactly what I needed, to feel the fresh air and be in that peaceful state with the animals. Amanda Elizabeth, reader. The Book of Love. I was in my 30s when I accidentally found out I was adopted, a discovery that left me feeling somewhat angry and lost. After 6 months of searching, I found my birth mother in England and eventually flew over to meet her and my two half-sisters. As nice as all that was, there was so much I didn't know. Then one of my sisters sent me a beautiful scrapbook with a picture of four women on the cover. It was filled with photos and information about our Scottish lineage, our grandparents, and uncles. Each page had a wonderfully detailed letter describing each person's personality. That priceless object was a dose of healing when I needed it most. Lorna Little, reader. Safe and Sound. It's a gift to remember my mother's voice as she read to me when I was a child. I loved to rest my head against her side and feel her voice resonating through her ribs. It seemed to me like I was putting my ear to an instrument being played, a cello, deep and soothing. Kathy Bates, actress. Turns of Endearment. Many years ago, I was living in a New York City hotel that I called the Roach Palace. My spirit had been crushed by a horrible breakup, and I couldn't eat or sleep. When my neighbor and dear friend Billy was moving out, the glass knob on the door to his room came off, and he gave it to me. It was like he was handing me hope that a door might open, and eventually it did. I survived. When Billy went to L.A. to fulfill his dream of being a comedy writer, I returned the knob to him. We've been passing that doorknob back and forth for 30 years, to usher in a new job, a new baby, the publication of my novel. It's on my desk now, and when I hand it to Billy, he'll tear up the way I do each time he gives it to me. Cynthia Bond, author. Box of Dreams. I left my home in Toronto to move to LA, where I knew no one, to pursue my dream of being an actress. My older brother was one of the only people who believed in me. When I got to California, I opened the trunk of my car and found a vision box he created for me, with almost 100 laminated photos of all my heroes and books that inspired me, plus an image he'd made of my name on a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. There were even pictures of puppies because I longed to have a dog one day. When I feel like giving up, that box reminds me of all the great people and things awaiting me on my journey. Natasha Kaja, reader. More Than a Scrap. I still have a scrap of paper given to me by Vincent Harding, a speechwriter for Martin Luther King Jr. I was a young woman wrestling with questions about my future. Could I be both a spiritual seeker and a social activist? Harding wrote down these words attributed to the educator and theologian Howard Thurman. Don't ask yourself what the world needs. Ask yourself what makes you come alive and then go do that. Because what the world needs is people who have come alive. Elizabeth Lesser, co-founder of the Omega Institute. A Wholly New Perspective. I was recently on the phone with a dear friend, and as we were about to hang up, he said, "Remember, you are the loving expression of God." I almost fell down from the power of those words. Me, the loving expression of God? I've begun carrying that awareness with me daily, a most beautiful gift. Mbolo Moob, author. A Real Gem. I was out of work, facing foreclosure, and feeling worthless. To get my mind off things, a friend took me to a music festival where we stopped at a jewelry booth. I commented on a gorgeous necklace, and the salesman said he'd love to sell it to me. I told him I'd love to buy it, but I was about to be homeless. Half an hour later, I felt a tap on my shoulder. The man from the booth pressed the necklace into my hand and said, "I hope things get better soon." I realized then there is still great kindness in the world, and I do matter. After that, everything fell into place. I had the courage to call about a job, and I was hired. I found a program that would pay my mortgage for 18 months. One single act of kindness from a stranger changed my life forever. Catherine Tripp, reader. A friendly reminder. Some time ago, I lived as a Buddhist monk in a forest monastery in Thailand, where I learned from the master, Ajahn Chah, a man of great wisdom who was very demanding. We'd walk for miles in freezing weather to collect alms for food, then sit meditating all night. I would be shivering, achy, exhausted. But one morning at 4 o'clock, at the very coldest moment, Cha smiled, winked at me, and said, "You can do it." And I knew then that I could. Jack Kornfield, co-founder of the Insight Meditation Society. What Santa forgot. I always wanted an easy-bake oven, but Santa never delivered one. When I was 34, my sister bought me one for Christmas, and yes, I made a cake. Suzanne Tosconi, reader. The joy of sisterhood. On my 19th birthday, my best friend and roommate, Sarah, gave me a copy of The Joy of Cooking. I'd moved away from home at age 16 and had been living with Sarah for a couple of years. She'd saved up tips from a restaurant job to pay for the book. It inspired the start of my love of cooking and was a true mark of independence. I'm still moved each time I read the inscription on the inside cover. You're like a sister to me, XO, Sarah. Gillian McLeod, reader. Golden gift. A close friend and mentor once told me, indecision is a decision, a bad one. That gift became a golden rule in my life. Peter Walsh, organization expert. Fancy free. When I was in my early 20s, I was working to put myself through college, and I was always broke. My sister Penny, in similar financial purgatory, spent the months before Christmas collecting department store samples of perfumes I could never afford. Chanel No. 5, Shalimar, Joy. Each little vial was wrapped in colored tissue, and they filled an entire shoebox. She gave me a year's worth of feeling pretty and put together, and I was so moved that she understood how deeply I wanted those things, all without my ever asking. Paula McLean, author. Grace over grudges. The summer I turned 16, my father gave me his refurbished 69 Chevy Malibu convertible. Cherry red, chrome accents, V8 engine, a gift wasted on me at that age. What did I know about classic cars? The important thing was that Hannah and I could drive around Tucson with the top down. Hannah was my best friend, a year younger but much taller, almost 5'10". Hannah's a knockout, my mother always said, and sure enough, that summer she signed with a modeling agency. She was already doing catalog work and some runway. A month after my birthday, Hannah and I went to the movies. On the way home, we stopped at a drive-thru, putting the fries on the seat between us to share. "Let's ride around a while," I said. It was a clear night, oven warm, full moon slung low over the desert. Taking a curve too fast, I hit a patch of dirt and fishtailed. What happened next is hazy. I plowed through a neighbor's landscape wall and drove into a full-grown palm. The front wheels came to rest halfway up the tree trunk. French fries on the floor, the dash in my lap, an impossible amount of blood on Hannah's face, flaps of skin hanging into her eyes. They took us in separate ambulances. In the ER, my parents spoke quietly. Best plastic surgeon in the city. End of her modeling career. We'd been wearing lap belts, but the car didn't have shoulder harnesses. I'd cracked my cheekbone on the steering wheel. Hannah's forehead had split wide open on the dash. What would I say to her? When her mother Sharon came into my room, I started to cry, bracing myself for her anger. I deserve it, I thought. She sat beside me and took my hand. I rear-ended my best friend when I was your age, she said. I totaled her car and mine. I'm so sorry was all I could get out. You're both alive, she said. The rest is window dressing. I started to protest, and she stopped me. I forgive you. Hannah will, too. Hannah's stitches look like an intricate roadmap tattooed on her forehead. She never modeled again. But Sharon's forgiveness allowed Hannah and me to get back in the car together that summer, to stay friends throughout high school and college, to be in each other's weddings, and to watch my four teenagers fawn over her three younger children. I think of her gift of forgiveness every time I'm tempted to resent someone for a perceived wrong, and whenever I see Hannah. The scars are so faded no one else would notice, but in the sunlight I can still see the faint shimmer just below her hairline. For me, after all these years, an imprint of grace. Jamie Quarto, author. Our next article by Jean Chatsky is titled, From Spender to Donna. For Donna, a 49-year-old mom and writer from New York, money has always been emotional. Fighting with her husband? Time to shop. Kids stressing her out? Amazon binge. But recently, the medicine stopped working its magic. Her credit is shot, she has zero money saved for an emergency, let alone retirement, and she's facing a divorce. Her goal is to keep her children in the house they've grown up in at a time when home values are soaring. In order to do that, she needs to refinance the mortgage into her own name and give up half of her soon-to-be ex's 401k and trade. Things will be tight, but Donna has the income to make it happen. What she doesn't have is the credit. Proving she's worthy to a mortgage lender will mean making on-time payments for at least a year in order to up her credit score, while simultaneously stashing away cash for unexpected emergencies. Her money type, nurturer. The way women approach money has a lot to do with how they were raised, their personality, and the influences in their lives. Donna took the Her Money, Money Type personality test to unearth the drivers behind her spending and saving. What she learned was that although she may seem impulsive and irresponsible, her need to nurture is responsible for her overspending. When a nurturer has money, she loves to give and share the wealth. For Donna, that giving has always been focused on her kids, making sure they have everything she thinks they need to be happy and accepted, whether it's vacations, $200 sneakers, or sometimes expensive sports and activities. She's also always the first to step up to donate to friends' charitable efforts and her own. That makes her feel good, but if she doesn't keep close track of her donations, her goodwill could derail a sound financial future. When I think about my money, I feel overwhelmed, Donna says. I want to feel at peace. How did it get this bad? Donna's unhealthy relationship with spending started around the time she had her first child. She knew she wanted to stay at home in the early years of childhood and left a full-time job with benefits to freelance and raise her kids. That meant hustling to find work, using her husband's health insurance, and forgoing retirement savings to spoil her kids. It seemed to work until her marriage began to fray and her husband lost his job. Money became a battle and spending was her weapon. 2 years of struggling, borrowing, and charging created an untenable situation. Instead of reining it in, Donna says she continued to take her family on vacations, sign up her children for activities, and spoil them. A few missed or late mortgage payments here, a couple of missed credit card payments there. She assured herself it wouldn't matter as long as she and her kids felt good. Now Donna is paying the price. She's got a good job and a six-figure income and is no longer racking up new debt. In fact, she's paid a lot of it back, but those impulses to spend still plague her. A roadmap for getting back on track. Pam Kruger, founder of WealthRamp.com and co-host of the Friends Talk Money podcast, sees hope for Donna. What she needs, Kruger says, is a plan to help her stay on course and achieve the peace of mind she so desperately needs. Here's what she suggests. Step one, admit there is a problem. We've all been there, says Kruger, using spending to feel better emotionally, but it tends to backfire. You spend to feel more in control, but end up feeling guilty and reckless. Being aware of what you are doing and trying not to do it again is the first step to recovery. I heard Donna flip the switch and say, I aspire for more now that I'm getting divorced. I want a clean slate, says Kruger. Now the question is, how does she clear a path and be a good example for her kids? Forgiving herself is a big part of that. Step two, look at your situation realistically and by the numbers. Keeping the home may not be the best financial decision for Donna. Cashing out and moving to a lower cost location would set her up financially, keeping more in retirement to grow, but it's not what she or her children want. That's fine, but Donna should be clear-eyed about the expenses associated with owning the house. By keeping the house, she'll probably tread water, Kruger says. It's the taxes, insurance, and the cost of landscaping and maintenance. If Donna makes and keeps to a plan for keeping up with all these, she can manage. Step 3, prioritize your savings and your credit score. To meet her goal of money peace of mind, Donna has to make a big effort to reduce her expenses in the first year and focus on cleaning up her credit. That means tracking every penny for at least a couple of months to figure out where money is leaking out of her budget and paying every bill on time with an emphasis on staying out of credit card debt. Kruger also wants to see Donna have at least 6 months of expenses saved in an emergency fund, including mortgage payments. Step number 4, don't ignore retirement. Donna still has many working years left, but with nothing saved for retirement, she needs to step it up. That means participating in her company's 401k, at least to the match, if it offers one, and setting up a Roth IRA to save more. Saving for her children's college may seem like the natural next step, but amassing money for retirement has to come first. You can finance a college education, but you can't borrow for your retirement. Will she do it? If Donna follows this roadmap, it will take about 1 year to pay down her debt, make on-time mortgage payments, and build up her emergency fund, then another 2 to 5 years to start saving for retirement and achieve the peace of mind she's hoping for. This plan is dynamic. Life changes all the time, says Kruger. Let's say she hits the milestones in year one and feels more in control of her life. She may love the feeling of money in the bank and never impulse spend again. As for Donna, she says she's ready for a change and is going to get serious about saving and paying down debt. I realize how important my credit score is to my and my children's financial future, and I'm willing to do whatever it takes to improve that, she says. Fighting the impulses to spend will be my biggest challenge, but I am ready. I have the income and resolve. Now I just need the time to follow this roadmap. Our next article by Jenny Tung is titled, Distracted, Frazzled? Try the Concentration Cure. Even the most scatterbrained, spread-too-thin people can benefit, says spiritual teacher Dan DePonte, author of the new book, The Power of Unwavering Focus. We silenced our devices and asked how. Why is focus so important, and what do you say to people who are thinking, I can't concentrate on anything, how can I do this? Focus is the fundamental necessary tool we need to do everything else well. Above and beyond meditation, breathing, and exercising, concentration is the basic skill that everybody needs to learn. It still sounds like a tall order. How do you start? The path begins with understanding how the mind works. We have a mind and we have awareness. Awareness moves through the mind. Concentrating is your ability to keep your awareness on something or someone for an extended period. Can you say more about the difference between the mind and awareness? Yes. I look at the mind as a vast space with many different areas within it. One area of the mind is anger. Other areas are jealousy, happiness, sadness, food, and technology. There are so many different areas. Awareness is a glowing ball of light, which in essence is you. You are pure awareness traveling through the mind. That's the first thing to get clear, that they're distinctly separate things. Second, at any given point in time, I am in charge of where my awareness goes. If someone says to me, hey, Dan DePonte, your shawl is ugly, they could take my awareness to an upset area of the mind. But if I can move my ball of light back to a content area of the mind, I can say, I'm not going there. How do you practice this? You need to develop two qualities, willpower and concentration. I define willpower as a mental muscle. If I say something to you and you say something to me, and as you're talking, my ball of light drifts away and I start thinking about something else, I use my mental muscle to bring my ball of light back to you. Then I use my powers of focus or concentration to hold that ball of light on you. Now, how do we make that practice stick? By identifying non-negotiable, reoccurring events in your average day. Every day I talk to my wife, 5 minutes here, 1 minute there. Every time I speak with her, I practice concentration. If my awareness drifts away, I bring it back. It drifts away, I bring it back. And that's the practice. People are always looking for the spectacular. If I said to someone, wrap your left leg around your neck and breathe out of your right nostril while you hold this mudra, hand pose, people would go, that's an amazing spiritual exercise. But if I tell you your only task is to bring awareness back every time it drifts away, they say, oh, is that all? The essence of mastery is repetition. If you anchor a practice in something that occurs every day, that's how you create traction, which is the key. You write that willpower is a muscle that keeps getting stronger, that the benefits of this practice are cumulative. Exactly. One way to develop willpower is to finish what you begin. It takes more energy to finish something well, to do a little bit more than is required, and that effort is willpower. For example, every night I floss, brush my teeth, put on my pajamas, and go to sleep. When I wake up in the morning, I make the bed. Making the bed is finishing the process of sleep. Then I make coffee, drink the coffee, and wash the coffee cup. Washing the cup is finishing the task. So now my whole day becomes opportunities to develop willpower and therefore develop focus. You're pro-technology. How is unwavering focus possible with all our screens and apps shouting for our attention? I look at technology as a tool that serves me. I don't serve it. My wife and I live in Costa Rica. We're creating a spiritual botanical garden and have planted 4,000 or 5,000 trees in the last 10 years. Every time we plant a tree, we take a spade from our shed, dig a hole, plant a tree, wash the spade, and put it back in the shed. I don't carry the spade with me all day. Technology is the same thing. That's a helpful shift in thinking. Finally, how does mastering focus manifest in a person's life? What will it do for you? Practically speaking, you'll be much more productive and efficient because you're not multitasking, which is exhausting. If you have 5 projects and let your awareness jump indiscriminately between them, the result is anxiety. When we can keep awareness on one thing at a time, we essentially eliminate the experience of anxiety. Also, we are on this planet for a finite amount of time. By giving you my undivided attention, I'm telling you that I value you. I value your time. I value your energy. I value who you are and what you have to say. It's an amazing form of love and respect. Our next article by Alex L. is titled, How to Move On from Tiny, Painful Criticisms from Mom. My friend Eric and I sat around a wooden table in the farmhouse we had rented for the weekend. We'd been talking about our lives and the many transitions happening for us in motherhood, partnership, and work. She was separated from her husband. I was struggling with being home every single day during the pandemic. Over dinner and a glass of wine, we talked about it all. The good, the bad, the changes, and the struggles. I remember thinking there was something healing about the non-judgmental safety net of sisterhood. It felt so nice to have uninterrupted girl time. As the conversation progressed from our current lives to our childhoods, it felt right to start baking the peach cobbler I'd been making for a month straight. I'd been raving to Erica about this dessert all day. Both of us were excited to dig in. I hadn't always been interested in cooking. As a kid, the kitchen wasn't a fun place for me. Messes weren't encouraged at my home, and I was more in the way than anything else. From afar, I would watch my mom bake and cook. For many years, cooking felt more like a forbidden activity than a chance to be creative and even free. Later, when I was in my early 20s, a close friend taught me how to stop overthinking it and instead taste and feel my way around the kitchen. Looking back, that was one of my first adult lessons on self-trust, to not know what I was doing and try anyway. Now, as an adult who loves to bake, especially alongside my children, I found a lot of healing and plain old fun in making messes, flour dusting my clothes, sugar sweetening the countertops. When the timer went off for the cobbler, Erica and I rushed to the oven. The cobbler was the perfect hue of golden brown, and the sugar had caramelized beautifully. We both could see the butter bubbling like mini eruptions under the crust. I was so excited about how good it looked, I took a photo and sent an enthusiastic text to my mom and grandmother to display my homemade creation. In response, my mom wrote back, "Your cooking is improving." "My cooking is improving?" I replied. "I've been cooking and baking for years. I have a whole family to cook for. This isn't a new thing." The conversation went silent after that. I was so frustrated with myself for sending them that message. At the moment, I thought, of course my mom can never just say, "Alex, that's nice," or "Great job, how did it taste?" Even a simple yum would suffice. Everything she says always has to be something that would leave me questioning myself. I looked up from my phone with tears in my eyes, feeling both hurt and foolish for being hurt. How could the text exchange warrant such a big and emotional response? But it was huge for me. Erica asked me what was wrong, and I started sobbing. She wrapped me in a hug. "It's okay, babe," she said in her warm, loving voice. When I got myself together, we talked about it. I tried to explain how discredited I felt every time I did something, big or small, and even though I'd done so much work on my relationship, especially the relationship with my mother, certain interactions, even a short text message, still sent me spiraling backward. More than anything, I was frustrated with myself that I hadn't yet gotten to a point of accepting that certain things will always be what they are. Starting from scratch time and time again, just like the baking I love to do, was frustrating rather than rewarding. Worse, I knew what I had to do. I could either make peace with the reality of my circumstances or continue putting myself in situations where I expect different results, yet know that I won't get them. This doesn't make me or my mother good or bad. It just means that certain things may not change and that we are different. I was the one with the issue. My mother wasn't suffering like I was. She had no clue that that exchange hurt me and ruined my night. As Erica dug into our warm dessert topped with ice cream and ate it all in one sitting, I realized that so many tender bits of our lives may surface at any given moment, and that backtracking is part of healing sometimes. There is nothing wrong with having to start from scratch time and time again. Yes, that can sound exhausting and a little corny, but I wasn't alone. I had a friend, I had time, and I had Cobbler. Excerpted from How We Heal by Alex L., copyright 2022, published by Chronicle Books. Author's note. My reflection. I wrote How We Heal to remind people that healing is possible even on our darkest days. It doesn't look pretty, it's not always easy, and it can leave us feeling flustered. My hope is that readers own their truth and learn what healing looks like for them and their journeys. Each of us is on a different path. The grief and healing come in waves. They are not one size fits all. I also think it's important for folks to celebrate the micro moments of joy that emerge when they're in the thick of their tenderness. How We Heal is an invitation to uncover our truth, set ourselves free, and be a vessel for community care. Alex L. is an author, certified breathwork coach, and restorative writing teacher. Writing came into her life by way of therapy and the exploration of healing through journaling and mindfulness. The intention behind Elle's work is to build community and self-care practices through literature and language. Our next article by Rachel Goldsmith Turo is titled, "The One Sentence That Turned Self-Hate into Self-Love." One blustery winter morning 15 years ago, I was the only person to show up for a yoga class. Instead of canceling, the teacher generously guided me through an entire private lesson. She wove friendliness and self-compassion into the yoga poses themselves and suggested that as I breathe, I could infuse kindness and encouragement into my breathing itself by silently repeating, "Inhale, my friend. Exhale, my friend." The idea was to notice my breathing consciously in the moment and combine that with referring to myself with tenderness. I noticed that the mantra swiftly dissolved self-evaluation in my yoga practice. It was a revelation. I took the line and ran with it. There's so much to love about it. It's short, literally one breath long. It's easy. It's portable. I started beginning my meditation with it each morning and then sprinkling it throughout my day. I said it to myself in the elevator, in the first few breaths upon waking up, or in moments that felt difficult. Now whenever I say it, I sense that I'm building up and replenishing internal reserves of love. The phrase energizes and encourages me. It's become a sort of container for my inner experience. You can substitute in other words for my friend, such as my dear, my love, kiddo, or even your own name. Whichever you choose, here's how this deceptively simple phrase can transform the way you treat yourself and others. It honors friendliness. Calling yourself my friend or my love provides a framework for relating to yourself with kindness, friendliness, and encouragement. That feeling is spacious enough to recognize that things might be truly hard, even awful. But the phrase helps us access a deep gentleness that doesn't expect cheerfulness in every moment. As I silently say the words my friend or my love to myself, I'm reinforcing the kind of relationship I want to have with myself, as well as the kind of self-talk that can cultivate it. It brings that feeling into your body. The phrase matches attention to breathing with kind self-talk, which means I feel it in my body instead of just having it swirl around in my mind. I recently listened to a question and answer session with the mindfulness teacher, Thich Nhat Hanh. One participant asked, "How do I love myself?" I anticipated that Nhat Hanh's response would involve the mind rather than the body, but he answered by describing how he greets his body in a loving way when sitting down to meditate. "I have a body. Hello, body." What gets me is the way he speaks to his body, kindly, patiently, and with deep respect. It's not rushed. It's easy to imagine how the caring relationship he cultivates with his body can radiate toward his thoughts, his emotions, and his interactions with other people, and toward loving all of himself. It holds you in the present moment. A third component of inhale my friend, exhale my friend, that appeals to me is its emphasis on the present moment, this one very present breath that is only happening right now. There are so many hardships in this life. Relationships can have thorny misunderstandings or painful strife, or they can end. There's illness and death. There's stress from too much work. Sometimes it can seem impossible to imagine how you're going to cope over the long haul, or even this week, or even today. This sentence invites us to take things just a moment or breath at a time, which can seem much more bearable. It modulates your breath with gentle attention. The amount of time it takes to silently say to yourself, "Inhale, my friend," can change the length and quality of your breath itself. When you're stressed, it's easy to breathe in a quick and shallow manner or to even hold your breath. Besides the kindness of the words themselves, the fact that it takes a few seconds to silently articulate them can be an intervention all on its own. People who experience anxiety sometimes report that breathing exercises make them feel more stressed because they struggle to relax their breathing. But the goal of this exercise is to offer kind attention to a single breath without any pressure to change your breathing. If your breathing happens to become slower and more relaxed, that's just an added benefit. It counters negative bias. As humans, our attention is biased toward threats, problems, and negative feelings. It doesn't mean we're not handling life well enough. It's just how our brains evolved. As a mechanism for staying alive, the negativity bias makes us hypersensitive to potential threats in our environment. Although such biased attention might promote physical survival, the habit of focusing on the bad stuff can harm our well-being. The more I practice inhale my friend, exhale my friend, the more I strengthen my inner resources. It shifts my attention from external stress to internal coping. I'm grounded, I'm calling upon an inner foundation or sanctuary, and I'm left with a feeling of gladness. From the self-talk workout, 6 science-backed strategies to dissolve self-criticism and transform the voice in your head, by Rachel Goldsmith-Turow, copyright 2022. Our next article by Amy B. Scher is titled, 5 Signs Therapy is Not Going as Well as You Think. We're constantly analyzing our relationships with partners, parents, and friends, but when was the last time you evaluated your relationship with your shrink? Here are 5 signs you may need to reconsider your choice of therapist. You just can't talk about the Pinot Grigio. You sink into your therapist's couch and start spilling about your nagging mother, your moody teenager, and your passive-aggressive office mate. But when you think of that entire bottle of wine you pour every night just to wind down, you choke. People forget this is a relationship where trust should be a foundation, says Soumya Dave, MD, psychiatrist, and author of What a Happy Family. Dave says it might take a minimum of 3 to 4 sessions to start feeling comfortable with opening up to someone. When it comes to talking about sex or race, though, if you feel like your therapist just doesn't get you, don't push through. They know just what to do immediately. It's a red flag if your therapist is too eager to fix you, says Eric Sandstad, a licensed psychotherapist with the University of Kentucky Chandler Medical Center. This may be part of their own ego or agenda, but rushing or taking over for a client isn't part of a healthy therapeutic relationship. He also says to proceed with caution when a therapist has already prepared tools and procedures to use without getting to know you or your situation first. They may be hurrying you through a predetermined plan that's not a good fit. You end up discussing your husband instead of your mother. The therapist's role is to give the client back their autonomy right from the start, says Sandstad. Your therapist should be asking things like, what would you like to focus on in your session? In other words, you should be an active leader in your therapy. The relationship is a partnership. The clinician holds a map of interpretation for the session, but the client should take the driver's seat. They say, yeah, girl, me too. Wanda Vargas, PhD, supervising psychologist at New York Presbyterian Hospital, warns against a therapist who can relate to you too much and shows it. While it's nice to have a level of resonance with each other, your therapy isn't going well if your therapist takes up time sharing his or her issues instead of talking about yours. You still can't cope in real life. Therapy is not a linear process, so some days you might feel better and other days you might feel worse, says Jennifer Miranda, licensed psychologist and former lecturer at Rutgers University. But overall, you should feel like you're moving in the right direction. Miranda suggests these questions to get clear. Do you feel like your symptoms are better managed? Do you feel like you have a better sense of self? A lot of people get attached to therapists because they like them. Maybe they make you laugh and are just so nice. But their job is to give you concrete tools you can use in real life. If you initially seek treatment because you are struggling to manage your anxiety, you should be leaving therapy with a well-established coping toolbox, which might include cognitive behavioral techniques such as reframing thoughts, mindfulness, acceptance strategies, and more. If after several sessions you have no better sense of how to manage or live with the anxiety in a more functional way, this can indicate it's time to move on, Miranda says. Well, in this week with Oprah and Gail, they say you should appreciate how far you've come. Hi, insiders. Oprah, we've been hiking a lot lately, and today's hike was really easy. It was like a stroll. It's a beautiful day. Gail, I can actually wear tennis shoes. Oprah, yes, we are wearing sneakers, not our hiking boots. Gail, the poles are helpful, though. Oprah, yes, aren't the poles great? Gail, yes, the poles were helpful. Oprah, here's the thing. I've been hiking a lot this past year, getting myself in shape. I shared with you all that I got new knees and I made a vow. I said, Jesus, if you let me walk again, I'm going to use these knees. Gail, did you say that? Oprah, yes, I did. Gail, you did? Oprah, I said that on the day of my first rehab because I could not lift my leg off the bed. I couldn't lift my heel off the bed. Gail, Oprah, the reason why this fascinates me is because you have a high tolerance for pain, and right after the surgery, you said it's the worst pain you've ever felt. Oprah, yeah, it was a bad pain. Gail, that's why I marvel that you go from that to hiking. Oprah, it was bad pain at first. I would tell anybody who's thinking about getting knee surgery, it is really bad pain for the first couple of weeks afterwards. It was like fire pain. I was dreaming of Civil War soldiers getting their legs cut off. Gail, then you did it again. Oprah, and then I did it again. I had one in August and one in November, so we've been hiking. The other day, Gail had gotten off a plane and joined us in the hike 5 miles up the mountain for a total of a 10.2-mile hike. At the end of the hike, you said, Gail, I said it was hard, but you don't quit because it's hard. Even though there were a couple times I really wanted to quit. Keep in mind, there was always a vehicle there that you could get into. Oprah, I for sure thought Gail was going to get into the vehicle coming back down. It's really hard on your limbs coming back down. But you said you don't quit because you're tired. That you were thinking about, am I in pain? Can I keep going? Gail, that's my barometer. Are you in pain? Yeah, but is it pain you can get through? The big thing was I was tired, and being tired isn't a reason to quit. Oprah, I think that's a great mantra for this year. But I also thought this, Gail. You don't quit because you're tired, but you have to give yourself enough breaks so that you can restore yourself to be able to keep going. Gail finished the hike an hour and a half after I did. Gail, I finished the hike an hour after everybody else did. You know I finished because I wasn't trying to keep up with you. Is that the point? Oprah, that is the point. Gail, I was not trying to because I knew I couldn't. Oprah, that is the point. You finish in your own time. You do it in your own time. So I was an hour behind my girls. I'm 40 years older than they are. I was an hour behind them. Gail was an hour and a half behind me. Everybody was hiking at their own pace. Hiking is such a beautiful metaphor for life. You don't quit because you're tired. You give yourself enough breaks to keep going up the hill. As I've shared before, don't look at how far you have to go. I was just looking at my feet going up. Gail, that's all I saw was my feet. Oprah, then turn around and look at how far you've come, and you'll go, whoa, look at how far we've come. I leave you with this, insiders. As we begin another year, another season, another journey of life, look at how far you've come. Give yourself the time and the breaks you need to get to where you need to go, and don't compare yourself to anybody else. Run your own race and keep going. Every week, Oprah is setting an intention exclusively for Oprah Daily Insiders with reflections on topics like letting go, forgiveness, coming into your own, and more. Thanks for listening this week, and come back next week for more articles from O, the Oprah magazine. Anybody else, run your own race and keep going. Every week, Oprah is setting an intention exclusively for Oprah Daily Insiders with reflections on topics like letting go, forgiveness, coming into your own, and more. Thanks for listening this week, and come back next week for more articles from O, the Oprah magazine. We have run out of time for today's episode of Oprah Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Brandi Spragata, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Oprah Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.